Captain's log, stardate 41255.6. After delivering a party of Earth colonists to the Stranad solar system, we have discovered another Class M planet in the adjoining Rubicon star system. We are now in orbit there, having determined it to be inhabited as well as unusually lovely. My first officer has taken an away team down to make contact, and they are in the process of returning to the ship.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske File. We are continuing our Let's Watch of Star Trek Next Generation. This is Season 1, Episode 8, titled Justice. It's directed by James L. Conway, teleplay by Worley Thorne, and a story credit by Worley Thorne and Ralph Willis. In the next section, we get into the actual breakdown of the plot, so I won't go into that too much. Needless to say, this is the episode where the Enterprise runs into a planet of sexually active adults, and Wesley Crusher crushes some flowers, causing him to become under threat of execution. So, we have a guest star coming up with the next bit to help me talk about this so I don't sound so crazy talking to myself. And it's Mr. Modi Operandis, and so we will get to that right after this break. Thank you.
And I welcome this huge one. Oh, yes.
Nice planet.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Penske File. We're watching our Let's Play, or Let's Watch, of Star Trek The Next Generation, and we're joined by a very special guest today. We have Modi Operandis, who is a fellow YouTuber, and he's going to join in, and as we discuss the episode Justice. So how is it going on your side over there, Mr.
Hello.
Modi?
Hello! Welcome. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Sure, thanks for coming. It's I've got a pseudo professional thing going on here at this point, where I have guests instead of talking to myself like a lunatic.
It's taking the internet by storm right now.
Yeah. You realize you're going to be heard by 12 people who listen to this?
A whole 12. A whole my 12. God.
And
it's amazing.
So we will start with Justice. So, well, actually, I guess let's start with you came into Star Trek late, right? You didn't grow up with
this? Yes. I didn't watch it as a kid at all. Completely unaware of it. I just started watching it as an adult with my wife, who was a fan as a kid. So it's kind of fun watching it with someone who's really nostalgic about it. And I'm not at all. But I still enjoy sci-fi, and I enjoy Star Trek, and so I'm forgiving of it for all of its faults in Season 1 here especially.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've come up with a different perspective on it for the most part. I don't have any of that nostalgia for it, but it's been a lot of fun, I will say that. I understand why it's so popular.
Yeah, no, that's the... I think that's good, too. While I've been recording this, I start thinking about, like, I've watched all these episodes, like, 10 times over. And at this point, it's when I start talking about it, I don't. It's one of those things where you ever explain something to someone that you know really well, and then when you realize you're explaining it, you realize that you're skipping over virtually everything that the other person should know because you think it's like knowledge that they should have.
And you sound like a crazy person then.
Yeah, and then you're like, why is this idiot?
You assume knowledge that I have. Yeah.
Why is this idiot not understanding this thing that's so easy that I'm an expert at? So I feel like it'll be good to have someone's perspective because I try to watch this with my wife. And she does she just pretends to like it, sort of, just so I think she's trying not to like offend me or whatever I'm doing it. So I don't get much from her because she's like every episode is like, who is this? What is this person doing? What's happening? So it'll
it
be good.
It gets better. It gets better.
Does. And it's tough to start off with the first season. So yeah, we will. So I'm looking forward to your perspective here, which will be good.
Absolutely.
So let's get started with Justice. And Justice is, if I can pull this up, I will have discussed this in the little opening segment, but it's the 8th episode of the first season. And this is probably the first episode, I think, of the first season that I know it's bad. I think it's a very bad episode, but I actually enjoyed watching it.
It is enjoyable to watch, yeah. There's something about it that's so bad it's good, or I don't know. They're trying really hard. I'll say that
they are trying. It is the episode's really just a mess, but it's so silly that I don't mind going through it. So I guess we'll do like a little run through it as we go along.
Yeah,
we'll go through the plot of this and everything. But it's
absolutely
the cold open. No, it's not even a cold open, but
weird cold open.
It is a strange. It's very. I wrote down my notes. It's very sitcom-y. There's a lot of there's a lot of back and forth between the people that you don't really see, and the other weird thing about these first season is you've seen the rest of them, but they use shots in the first season that they never
really used. You mentioned for the rest that, yeah. Of the show.
I haven't noticed that myself, but you mentioned that in a previous episode, and I was starting to notice it. That there's a lot of weird choices with that the directing. And,
they
and
do the every shot time working. The director's like infatuated with the turbo lift. Anytime someone comes off of it, they're like, oh my god, let's get a full wide shot of this thing in action. And so, the cold open's very strange. They're going around, and Wesley Crusher's on the bridge for some reason.
For some reason, right? Even though episodes ago, Picard freaked out that he's on the bridge.
Yeah, and he's lounging and hanging onto that little archway. He's just like standing next to it,
and wearing a ridiculous sweater.
So wearing his enormous space sweater. And so
space sweaters.
Riker comes back with an away team. I guess they beamed down to this planet that the name escapes me. It's like Rubicon or something.
Rubicon something, yeah.
Rubicon 3, something like that. And I guess they've made first contact with these people, and they want to go down there. They're all desperate for shore leave. The doctor comes
in. Can we make a little, like, sidetrack right there? Like, first contact with this planet, and this planet, this episode revolves around Prime Directive stuff. Like, it doesn't seem like they should be contacting this planet at all.
No, this
violates the Prime Directive right there, I think.
It's like, you know, we just met these people. Let's go down. They mentioned they make love at the drop of a hat,
so we have to, yeah.
And they're like, this sounds like the perfect planet for shore leave, so let's head down.
Right, let's bring the kids down there, too. Wesley, get down there.
So to catch up with this, they've made first contact with this planet. They are desperate for shore leave for whatever reason. And the cold open ends with Wesley being chosen to go down for no particular reason.
And he is so proud about it, too.
He's
just beaming when anytime Picard talks to him, he just like is so joyful.
It is. It's earlier on in the earlier episodes, Picard just was immediately angry with him, and now it's only randomly angry where he gets at him.
Yeah,
I did
note that later in the episode, Picard is randomly angry about little things. He's an annoyed old grandpa in these early episodes.
He is, and not skipping ahead too much, but at the end of the episode where Wesley's facing his execution, Wesley says something, and Picard goes, "This doesn't concern you, boy."
yes, he's still angry at Wesley.
And it's like, it concerns my execution, sir. I think this concerns me.
This does concern me. Yeah. Wesley's so bold about it. It does concern me. Yeah.
The first season is definitely Picard sort of learning the ropes as a captain, I guess. He makes a lot of weird decisions like that.
Old grandpa, angry decisions.
So that's the cold open. And after
and Yar says, "Any hat." That was, they make love at the drop of a hat, and Yar says, "Any hat."
Any hat.
what are you talking about?
Riker is just beaming this entire...
Oh, he's in heaven. Yeah, like, I mentioned that. There's a scene where he just is walking through there, and he's, like, smiling, like, oh my god, he's in heaven.
So that's the cold open, is that. And then we get to the planet. So, I've never been to Los Angeles. I guess this is Van Nuys.
This is... Yeah, apparently that's the depression I got it from it too. Yoga, jogging, tanning, massages.
This was actually they hadn't written the
it's
people.
Desperate Housewives basically.
They hadn't written the aliens to be like that. They just went out on location in LA and shots, and this is what people look like. And they're like, well, we got to fill it into the episode at this point. So
yeah,
they go down, and it is basically 60s television.
Yes,
made in 1987. And so it's people wearing very little clothing. The what are these guys called? The Edo?
The Edo, yeah. I think their Edo is the name of their god, too, but I guess, I don't know. It's weird.
We'll get
but
to...
Yeah, Edo is what they're referred to as.
Yeah, I kept thinking they were calling them the Ego, which made less sense to maybe give
weird
them
a... Weird sense, yeah, because they're more id, if anything.
Yeah, they call them the id with two Ds or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So they go down, and they're basically a... sexual harassment doesn't exist on this planet.
Not at all.
You can basically go up to people and hug and make weird... They sort of tread the line of pedophilia a little bit.
It is awkward. And yes, they kind of make some like weird... I think actually also, Wes seems to be reading a lot into all of like, oh, they're using innuendo. I have to be like coy. Like, he's too old to be that naive about anything. Like, he's supposed to be like 15 in this, and he seems like he's like 8.
Yes, and the way society's going, I think, you know, 3-year-olds in the 24th century are going to start having, like, sex.
Like, they're going to watch this episode and be like, what is wrong with Wesley? Why is he doing that?
He can you know, he can reconstruct the warp engine, but he cannot figure out
love.
What's going on. Yeah. Can't figure out love. It's a very complicated situation. So besides the, I did enjoy this, that they said, Riker or someone says, everyone's very fit. And then a guy who comes over who is not fit at all is the guy.
Late 70s fit, yeah.
he's not particularly cut. He's not fat, but he's not particularly cut. And he's sort of got the, I shaved my chest 3 days ago look going on. So it's sort of grown in. And the woman is wearing a terrible wig, I guess, because they all have to be blonde.
Right.
Because that's
very strange.
That represents sexuality, I guess.
And their costumes are, like, crazy. Like, I don't know.
They wear the same things, which I thought was
They all wear the same things, yes. Yeah. But it's they have a uniform that says we have to wear nothing, basically.
So, they go, they greet everybody. Riker's beaming. Troy gets harassed by the guy. Yar does. Yar does a weird thing where even though she was raised on a planet with rape gangs, she is
she's smitten, into it, though.
She's
kind of into
by
it, yeah.
Any man that pays attention to her.
It's so weird.
And,
I mean, they haven't really, like, addressed that in her background yet. So, like, I don't know if they were figuring out her backstory later. But it, as far as this episode goes, it doesn't make any sense why she's so comfortable with all of this going on.
No. They've mentioned the rape gangs. That's about it. But
they have. Okay. They have mentioned it already.
I don't think we've gone to her. Do we ever go to? We do go to her planet.
Yes,
at some point. So yeah. I don't know if she was still on the show. Spoiler alert! But I don't know if she was still on the show at that point. So she has mentioned that, but yeah, otherwise she's just strange. And then I also enjoyed Worf with the nice planet line.
Nice planet. Yeah. I don't know. Understand? I don't understand.
And he also He basically acts during that hug like your creepy friend at the bar.
Yeah, he's creeped out. He's creeped out. He's creeping them out and. Yeah, it's weird. It's just a weird, awkward introduction.
That awkward, like, a little bit too close of a hug, just kind of lurching
He does get
over.
Into the hug real deep, yeah. He just gets all up in there, like, deeper than any of the humans did.
No, they all sort of respectfully,
The dwarf's like, I'm going to get this hug.
Which is character-breaking, I guess, for some sort of criticism.
Yeah, it's so weird.
He basically recovers later on when he says that he would break a non-Klingon or whatever. Which is he has that conversation with Riker, and it's like the filthiest Star Trek conversation I've ever had.
It really is.
Riker's like, I would interpret that in a different way, Mr. Worf. Anyway, back to this. So the other interesting thing about this race is that they run everywhere.
Oh, God. And then but when they say, you can't run, Wesley? Wesley's like offended. He's like, can't run? Like, I don't understand, Wesley. Why are you so offended that they think you can't run?
I know. It's just...
It's like, I'll show you.
They
tell
just,
me I can't run.
They materialized out of thin air.
Yeah.
And this crew is like, is running technology beyond your comprehension?
And we're going to run unless you can't run.
Can't run! I was half expecting that God to be Forrest Gump or something at this point.
Yeah.
But, so they run, and there's a nice, you know, 5-minute shot of them running awkwardly.
And then the yoga shot and the tanning shots and the massage shots and all that montage there.
And the other note that I wrote down at this point is I love these are very Star Trek things. They get better at this as it goes on, but it's a very original series thing where I can't figure out how the economy of this planet works.
Yeah, no. There's no economies in Star Trek at all. Like,
no, but at least...
I guess Earth has evolved past money, but like, I don't understand how this... civilization operates.
Well, how do they feed themselves? They all seem to be
right.
Just,
no one's working.
No one's working. Yeah. Everyone's sitting around, sort of rubbing each other's backs and dancing.
Unless their Edo God is just providing everything they need somehow.
That's true. Yes,
because they are kind of reliant on him. It seems like.
So they skip Wesley leaves at that point. He runs off with the.
He meets the kids. Yes, and the kids are also very creepy and weird. And like, they introduce the girl. They say, "Oh, can you come play with me?" He's like, "Yeah." And the girl's like, "Yes, please."
Yes. It's loaded, and I don't think
it's so strange.
I don't think it's at this point, but it is. It is. She's like, Wes is like, can you get me a stick? She's like, what's a stick?
Oh yes, the innuendo. Like,
and he's like, it's about 6 inches long and this thick.
It's 6 inches long, seriously.
It's like,
oh yeah, we'll go find that in the garden.
My wife was looking at me. She's like, "Do you think that was supposed to be a joke?" And I thought it was, but they play it off as if it is not supposed to be a joke.
No, it's not a joke to anybody. No one actually gets. There's been no innuendo at all, and then all of a sudden they do this tremendous innuendo thing, and actually no one's actually making any kind of joke. Yeah,
and they're just sitting there. So. I think that's the end.
Well, but Wesley's interaction with the kids, there's like, they're like, "Oh, you want to play a new game?" Oh, that comes a little later. But you want to play a game? And they're like, "I don't know. I don't. There's certain games I don't know yet." Like, he's yep. like, "What are you? Right? You're trying to read a lot into what they're asking you right now. Why yep. are you acting any stranger than you would from another human being?" Like, it's very strange interactions all around.
No, yeah, and it continues this stretch of Data does this a lot in the first season where. You know, he knows everything, but there are words, like very common words that he's never experienced. So
exactly, yes, yes.
And it's like throwing, they're like throwing a ball. What is this? It's not like Wesley's trying to explain like Keynesian economics or something to somebody. It's like,
hit it with a stick.
Do you understand physics of I can throw this and you can go get it?
Yeah.
And Data does this. Data does the same.
Yeah, Data's you're right. Data does the exact same thing. It's like, oh, what is this? Yeah. I can't think of a specific example, but it definitely is there all the time.
Yeah, the Ferengi episode, or something like that. He's like, what is... or Babel. I think Babel is the one.
Babel is in this episode, yeah.
So he's like, what is babbling? It's like, all right. Well,
I don't babble.
You should know every dictionary front to
yes,
back.
Yes, he's programmed with all language. He should understand.
And he knows how to please in all 69 languages or whatever. And, so I think that's the end of the first act at that point. I drew a line on my notes, so I assume that's what happened.
Yeah, and it goes back to the ship after that.
Yes, and the space bubble appears.
Mm-hmm.
And,
space bubble.
So this continues...
They get really kind of bad about writing like what they want this thing to look like, I think. Because there's a lot of, like, all of a sudden this crew starts speaking in like really vague terms. Geordi actually uses the term shadow something.
Yes.
Like, this is like... You don't actually want to write what this thing looks like, I see.
No.
You just want to write dialogue like shadow something.
It must have been a terrible script description or something.
This is a bad script.
Like a ship appears that is vaguely like something.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what I want God to look like, but it's a shadow something.
And Picard gets annoyed. He actually mentions it.
Yeah, he calls him out on it later, yeah. Exactly.
He's like, why is everyone calling this thing a nothing, blah, blah, blah,
or,
blah, blah.
Why is everyone talking in whatevers and somethings, yeah.
So this mystery ship appears... The viewfinder pans over, which I thought was a nice touch, instead of just cutting to it, which is interesting. And so they have this like tripod spaceship that looks like a ghost of a spaceship.
It's like the ships out of Tron with a little more like things on them, but they're like a couple combined together, and then they just lower the opacity on it, basically.
Yes, they're like, you know, this is probably copyright infringement, so let's
lower the opacity. It'll be okay.
It'll be fine. It's like. Yeah. Putting your music lower in a YouTube video or something to not
get
hit by the copyright. So the ship appears and it fires like a photon torpedo that turns into a little bubble. The bubble flies through the ship and ends up... it's a nice continuation of the Star Trek Season 1 omnipotent alien creature.
There's a lot of omnipotent creatures that they're meeting here in Season 1.
They are.
That never come up again. Like, Hugh is the only one that comes back, but, like, there's a lot of omnipotence going on that they never even address later.
No, and, yeah, the later seasons are much more, like... reality based, and here
let's have a god.
It's a god. It's basically a way that they can't just do what they want. That's why they add these little...
because they have some type of restriction on them. Because this whole thing be solved pretty easily. They would just violate the prompt directive and deal with Starfleet. But like, we have to introduce a god, so they have more stakes in this.
Stakes. But I also the prime directive is enough stake in this episode. I didn't understand.
It doesn't need. Yeah, it would have been more interesting if there was no god that he had to figure out if he wanted to like go against his command or if he wanted to do like it's morality versus justice is basically what's going on here.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly right.
It'd be more
right.
interesting that way. Yeah,
and so this god creature is basically stopping them from communicating. I guess it really doesn't do anything else, and it makes no sense why it's actually in there. And the worst part of the episode is the second half, I think, because it's mostly dealing with that, where the first half of the episode is the people on the planet, and I thought that was actually kind of funny.
Right.
Second half is them dealing with it, and it's basically Picard, Data, and a very emotional Dr. Crusher.
Who's really strangely acting here. I didn't like her acting at all in this episode, actually.
No, she's
very strange.
I can't tell if Gates McFadden is good.
that's a good way to put it. Yes, I can't tell if she's good or not. I mean, she is later. She's good in things, but she's not, like, here. She doesn't bring her A game, it seems like.
No, it's almost like she was unexpecting this amount of role. This is probably the most
she's been.
It's almost
like a soap opera kind of acting, almost, I would say.
Yeah, she's very theatrical. Yep.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's basically like they're just like, oh, Gates, this is your episode. And she's like, oh,
this
shit.
This is you, man.
Yeah, just had to run out there and
like, gotta start crying.
I'm going to start crying. And, yeah, so it's there's all that nonsense. And then we'll get to what happens here. So basically, this is all going on. They're doing shore leave. Everyone's very happy on this planet. And then Yar and Worf get this bomb dropped on them that this planet has the strangest judicial system, I
yes,
know.
Yes. There's no laws per se. There's all the laws. There's actually all the laws all the time, but they're only enforced in certain areas.
Enforced
the punishment zone.
All right, yeah. So let's break down this law system that they have. So they've somehow managed. They used to be. It's the typical story. They used to be ultra violent. All this nonsense, And somehow they came up with this system. Did the god? The god didn't implement this system, right?
It sounds like it's a god implemented thing to me. I don't know. It came out that way to me. That like, oh, let's come up with this thing.
Okay. So anyway,
I don't know. Maybe they're doing it themselves, but I don't know.
They never directly mention it, I don't think, but it would have made sense if the god had done it. I don't know. It's somewhat irrelevant. But
it's strange.
They have basically come up with this system where they have. Let me know if this is the incorrect interpretation.
Absolutely.
They rotate an area randomly, and it's defined with a white fence, and any kind of crime that happens in this area results in immediate execution.
That's close, but there's white fences to cordon off things that they shouldn't touch, like it's against the law, but the zone seems to rotate on a minute-to-minute basis, because when Wesley breaks the law by smashing up some flowers or whatever, and then the crew pulls their guns when they try to inject him with the death penalty. They say, well, if you were still in a punishment zone, this would be illegal too, but we are not, luckily. So it's literally on a minute-to-minute basis where the punishment zone actually is.
There's a lot.
And only these cops know where it is, apparently.
No, there's a lot of running for these cops,
yes,
back and forth. But yeah, this is the... So if I'm interpreting this right, you could brutally murder somebody outside of this
zone. And possibly get away with it, yeah.
And they would not have anything to do... They couldn't
only
do
if
anything.
You're in the punishment zone. Exactly. So if you're gonna commit a crime, go big and play the odds, because it's a big planet and you might get lucky here.
Yeah, and that's okay. So yeah, to cover this, Wesley's playing catch with these kids, and he runs a straight fly route out about 50 yards, and he just smashes into this. Basically a little greenhouse thing.
And yeah, the ball goes over his head and he runs straight into the thing without looking where he's going. Did the kid do that on purpose?
I would have to think. I mean,
come on.
If I'm from this planet, I'm like, hey, guys, there's a white fence, you know.
He's moving in on my woman here. I need to kill this kid right now.
I have to make a move.
Yeah.
And so Wesley smashes this thing. These guards come and they're like, we have to kill the child. Yar, Riker, and all them arrive at the same time and defend Wesley. They have this wonderful thing where a guy pulls out a very obvious syringe, and then Yar takes it and says it appears to be some kind of syringe.
It's a great analysis. Expert analysis from Yar on it appears to be a syringe. Yes, we know that. That's what he said he's going to inject him.
She is the highest ranking science officer. And Worf, I was a little surprised by how badly Worf reacts to this. You'd think this would be his kind of thing.
He's always overshadowed by Yar in all of these early episodes until Yar obviously leaves, but he never does any action. It's always just talking about his action.
No, yes, and being just complaining about being a warrior. But I would have thought the brutal execution thing would be okay, and he seems very upset by this as much as anybody.
Yeah, yeah, seems odd.
So Wesley gets arrested.
Well, then he's also when Wesley gets knocked over, he keeps saying, oh, I'm fine, like he's not worried at all about the broken stuff until he understands what's going on. But there's also the line with, I'm with Starfleet, we don't lie. Like that, that's such, oh my god, Wesley.
No, he's
such the wrong time to be bold here.
No man wearing a sweater this baggy would lie.
I can't lie, I'm wearing a sweater from Starfleet.
He's got nothing to hide. So... Yeah, they arrest him, or whatever happens. They take him away, and Riker and Yar at this point realize that they can't contact the Enterprise because of this energy field. And I think, I guess this is a little bit behind the scenes, but is this the first mention of the Prime Directive? Like, where they lay it out like this?
I haven't been watching the previous episodes as much as in detail as you have. So yeah. It's been a while since I watched them, a few months. So
okay.
You might be right. You might be right that this is the first time they really talk about Prime Directives.
Yeah, because
beyond the original series, obviously they had all that there already.
Yes, but. It is in the original series, right? So
right.
I guess we should be familiar with it.
Right, I think they assume some knowledge of Prime Directive or just some type of code that they follow.
Yeah, non-interference sort of thing.
Right.
So, yeah, if you're unaware, the Prime Directive is, you basically, it's a very loosely worded rule, but the Federation...
it means a lot of things, yeah.
Federation
it's
cannot...
like, it's like the Bible, basically.
Yes,
it can be interpreted many ways.
The Federation can't... Because anytime the Prime Directive comes in an episode, it's never a, let's follow this to the T. It's always like, how can we bend the Prime Directive?
Right, they're never following the Prime Directive. It's always like, how can we get around the Prime Directive in this episode?
And yeah, I guess this episode deals with it, but it's like this blind adherence to the Prime Directive. Just, it never seems to work.
Which they've already violated once and twice, and they will violate it again in this episode. There's three times they'll violate the Prime Directive in this episode, and only once they're actually worried about.
Yeah, so, first contact... again, I thought, yeah, there's the problem here. They made first contact with this group, right? I thought first contact was only warp capable species.
Yes, that's the whole point. It wouldn't be a problem except they made an episode that was the point, that they're going down to this planet introducing them
because
they're about to achieve warp ability, so they're doing first contact. Here it's like, oh, they're into sex. Let's just go down there and mess around for a little while.
They are really into this, cast, and we got to go down.
Well, you send Riker on the away team. What do you think is going to happen?
No, exactly. That population of the planet doubled by the time Riker was done. So they violate that there. They were making first contact seems to be a violation of it. They're trying to get Wesley out of there, which is a violation. And then
they bring a woman from the planet up to meet her god.
Yes, so this is how it happens. Picard goes down to try to talk to them. They say you have there. It's like John Wayne or something. You have till sundown to.
Yeah,
I don't know why. What do they? Why do they give them this time? It's not like they're going to change their mind.
Because they're off world. I think they mentioned that because they're off worlders, they'll have an exception. Which, if they've never made contact, but they have all of a sudden they came up with this exception that they're going to do. This is their first contact with anybody else, though. It's very, very strange that they came up with this rule down the fly like that.
No, but they seem so unyielding. They're like, they definitely want to execute him. So,
yeah, but also, you think about it, this is the first time they're meeting other species, and they're still, like, unwielding in their laws. They're willing to bend, like, oh, we can wait till sundown then, because they're off-world, but we're not going to stop enforcing our laws for you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very strange that they're willing to make exceptions in one case, but not another.
Not another. Yeah, so, regardless, even though they don't seem flexible on this, they give... a couple hours, basically, for Picard to come up with something, although I don't know why.
Tell him to just take the kid. They just want him to take the kid, and like Picard's like, oh, it's not that simple.
Right. Yeah, because they're like, you could basically have your way with us technologically, so why don't you just do that?
We'll just say he's a fugitive, you guys go your separate ways, he won't be allowed back here.
Yep.
It sounds like you're not going to come back anyways, so no deal.
No big deal. Yeah. We're going to go back to massaging and dancing, if you don't mind.
We don't need you, we're fine. We're fine here.
So Picard beams back to the ship with, like, the head woman from this planet, who's wearing a spectacular fake wig. And he brings her. They don't have 10 forward yet. So he says, we go to the starboard lounge, which looks like someone's apartment.
It's probably used as apartment in later episodes, I think.
It must be. Yeah, it must be a room. So he brings her out there, and she falls to her knees because she sees this god spaceship thing.
Ruined her life forever, pretty much.
Yes.
By showing her own god.
She's only in a catatonic state after this appearance. Yeah. So this seems to be a violation of the Prime Directive that no one seems to care about. And the ship can speak to people, so it yells to return the child, and then it sort of menacingly moves towards the Enterprise, so they beam her back.
It doesn't seem like that whole scene really accomplished enough or a lot besides just ruining this young girl's life by showing her own god. Like, Picard didn't get any more information out of this exchange here.
No, it accomplished.
Wanted to see what would happen.
It continues this string of this alien spaceship meaning nothing to anything. And so anytime you interact with it, it's like, what's the point of this happening? I don't get it.
He's testing his boundaries as far as what he can get away with this creature, basically.
He is, and it gave a great opportunity for... They do the wide shot when she gets beamed back, and you can tell Picard, like, the timing is off because she's being beamed. She's, like, basically away, and Picard is still yelling about it's time for her to be beamed off.
He's already doing it, Captain. Calm down.
So it's obviously
man.
Just one shot is him yelling for 5 minutes until the director says cut, and then the other one is beaming away, and they just mix to the timing.
Right. Like, oh, we need to cut 3 seconds off of this episode.
And so
cut that seat out.
And so the episode is really starting to drag at this point. And for basically the rest of the 10 minutes is Crusher, Picard really being a dick to Dr. Crusher.
Oh my god. Well, they got the scene with the scene with Crusher and Data. And where Data's babbling.
Yes.
It's a horrible scene.
It is.
It later redeems itself. The scene with Picard and Data is probably my favorite in the episode, when they're sitting in the captain's lounge and talking through the whole thing. That's probably my favorite episode, or favorite part in this episode.
No, it's the part that rings true. Although, are you watching this on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have Amazon Prime?
Yes.
Okay. I highly recommend watching them on Prime if you ever rewatch, because they're in the Blu-ray definition. And during the Data and Picard scene, it is very obvious that they've missed makeup on Data under his eye. And it is,
all right, I'll take a look.
It is very strange. I also noticed it in the episode previously I mentioned, where he gets his finger stuck in a Chinese finger trap. Data
does.
Yes,
I remember that one, yeah.
And when he pulls it off, in high definition, you can clearly see the makeup wipe away. And you can see his, like, human-colored finger.
His human skin. Oh, great.
So,
that's awesome.
So it's really worth watching in high def just to see these small things. So the Data's makeup is all screwed up in this scene, but it is a good scene. And then it's basically them just debating the Prime Directive about what they can
do. Yeah, I liked it. It. Like you said, it rings true. And Card actually seems a little more, like, less angry old man-ish. He apologizes to Data for blowing up at him before.
Yes.
Like, that's good. I like that.
And it's the only real conflict of the episode, because it doesn't have to do with the stupid... What they basically do with the alien spaceship is that they make it into, like, a actual god. Like a real-world human god. So that you're basically arguing against the morality of doing something
exactly.
in the face of God.
Exactly. Yeah, they use that contrivance so they can... Get at their strange larger message of morality versus justice.
Yes,
but they took a lot of steps to get there.
They did. It is a totally useless, and it's also, I mean, because like the Enterprise doesn't consider the thing to be a god, you know?
No, they know it's not. Right.
So it's sort of being so deferential to it is very strange. Because if anything. Yeah. This thing is on more of an equal footing because it has a spaceship, you know?
Right.
The Edo on the planet don't have anything going for them.
Exactly.
So they talk about this for a while. Crusher's emotional, and they beam down. And the resolution of this episode is they all beam down there, and Picard just says, yeah, all right, fuck it. Wesley, you're coming with us.
Right, exactly. That's the resolution. I'm going to do what I was going to do the entire time.
Yeah.
What everyone suggested up to this point, and we're just going to hope that your god lets us go, because... He might all of a sudden start caring about this Prime Directive that he just heard about.
Yes.
That's basically what they're like, oh, he's going to hold us to our own laws. You don't know what his thoughts are. You don't know what he's going to do. You just assume that he's going to hold you to your own laws, but you don't know what he actually is capable or interested in.
No.
He might just want to protect his planet.
And it's funny because they know this because we didn't mention, but the alien spaceship sort of mind melds with Data and absorbs all his knowledge.
Yes, yeah. Bubble they're, hits his forehead.
Yeah, they're basically
he goes
more,
out for a while.
And he tumbles over. They're basically like a more peaceful Borg. They basically
kind of,
like absorb all of your knowledge and use it against you or use it for you. So
that's true.
So they're down there. The Edo are very upset that the humans are going to come in and not obey their laws. Because
especially the cops. The cops are like, oh, you guys got to follow our laws.
No.
Otherwise, we're meaningless.
I know, and their nipples are so serious that I just like...
nipples are so serious.
You have to take them at their word. They're so intimidating. And, Picard just says, fuck it. He calls Wesley over and says, they say six to beam up, and they basically just leave, although Picard does a little soapboxing about...
Yes, he gets his little speech. That's actually a pretty famous line from the series, but...
Oh, is it? What line are you...
I think so. There can be no justice as long as there can be no justice as long as laws are absolute.
Yes, okay.
And then Riker throws a little, like, Me Too line in there as well.
They do, and it was obviously written, I mean, it's a shot of just Riker. He like delivers a wink to the camera.
Yeah,
it's just like, damn right, Captain.
I agree. Yeah,
I concur.
And then the Picard's like, looks like they heard you, number one.
I guess.
And then they all just beam out of there, and I assume we never make contact with that planet again.
It never comes up again. Like, yeah. Even this whole, like, omnipotent being here never comes up again.
No.
It's just done with. They don't bring it up. They create gods, and then they discard them just the same.
Yeah, it just disappears. And they make up some half-assed excuse to, like, this ship exists in a million different places at once. It's like, all right, well,
yeah,
I don't know.
It could be everywhere.
I guess that's supposed to imply omnipotence or something.
Right, so, like, maybe they... Yeah, maybe this god is, like, all of the gods that people have interacted with,
yep,
kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah.
But, like, Picard's like, I want to study it. And Geordi's like, I'm just glad it's gone. It's so strange.
Everyone's very free with their opinions in these early seasons.
Yes, yes.
It's like, later on...
Which is strange, considering that Picard flies off the handle at the drop of a hat,
no,
and like they're still free with their opinions about everything.
No, it's true, and it's something I noticed about the early season. No one seems a lot of the episodes. People don't seem to have particular roles. It's like their rank means nothing.
Yeah,
like anyone does anything. Like Geordi basically does anything that is asked of him. He flies the ship.
Right.
He goes to engineering.
Also, I noted just strangely that. Okay, later episodes, they make a big deal that it's Geordi's first time being left in command of the ship while away team goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Picard, Data is out, unconscious. Riker's down on the planet. Yar is down on the planet. Worf is down on the planet. The only person in charge right now is Geordi.
Yeah.
And they don't, like, mention it when Picard leaves. Like, I'm out of here. It doesn't leave anybody else in charge. So Geordi probably is the only one that is the highest-ranking officer here.
I assume.
And, they later in episodes they make a big deal that it's his first time. I'm like, nope, clearly it's not.
No, yeah,
it can't have been.
He's just a calm. I think he's the lieutenant at this point, or he's not a lieutenant commander. I think he becomes lieutenant commander with his promotion in season two. I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. He's just it's also useless. Everyone's very free with their opinions, and no one has a particularly well defined role except for Riker, I think, who's the most. He leads the away missions. That's like his thing.
Right. That's his thing.
His thing, and. Yeah, and so that's the end of the episode. They just sort of
justice.
They fade away. Justice is served. These
I guess
they go back to having apparently. Sex on the planet. The alien disappears.
Right. Everyone's
and the Enterprise.
Everyone's
leaves.
Happy. Oh, everyone's happy. They get what they want.
So, not a good episode.
It's not great.
It's
one of those episodes you have to see though for the series. Like it's an important episode, but it is.
I think it's great. Very memorable.
Yeah,
it's also memorable for all the reasons that are bad. Wesley gets a huge role.
Yes, which is just a mistake. Yeah, generally, if you give Wesley a big speaking part in anything, it's a big problem right now.
Yeah, I mean, he shouldn't even be there. There's no reason for him to go down on this thing. He's
we found this new this cool sex planet. Let's send the kids down.
Let's get
Wesley,
down.
Get down there.
Oh God. And then, otherwise, Picard's fine. The plot's stupid. acting is not great in this episode. It's let me see here. We'll close this up with. I'll give you some feedback here. So 12.7 million people watched it, which is insane, when it aired. The Will Wheaton reviewed it in 2006. He observed problems with his acting and the plot.
I listened to his podcast where he read some of like his thoughts on it.
Oh, his review.
It's pretty incredible. If you could, you can go find, there's a podcast called, what is it called? Memories of the Future Cast.
Uh-huh.
And he reads through his book where he talks about a lot of these season one episodes. And it is an incredible listen if you can find it.
I'll have to check it out. I saw like one that he had written a review, and not for this episode, but it was like a 1,000-page memoir. The review was so long; it was the longest review I've ever seen for a TV episode. I couldn't even make it through, even though I'm wildly interested in it.
Yeah.
So he observes plot development problems. So he's got a keen eye there. Particularly when Picard transports the Ito woman to the Enterprise, which I guess makes sense. We talked about that.
Yep.
Wheaton thought Picard's actions were a clear breach of the Prime Directive, which is otherwise the heart of the episode, which is true. Let's see. He gave it a B+, though, so maybe all that.
Yes, very strange.
Keith DeCandido for Tor.com said the episode collapses under the weight of its own ridiculousness. It's true.
Yep.
He thought the plotting involving Wesley was very predictable, and that the scripting for Picard helped cement him as a great character.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I'd kind of disagree with it. He's okay.
Well, I mean, he does have kind of like annoyance issues where he gets annoyed very very easily at things.
Yes, that's
like Data and other things, which he doesn't actually get that annoyed with later on.
No, he certainly loses his temper as the show goes on. He's the I don't know if you've seen it recently, the episode where they meet the Ferengi. Picard has a he has this little thing where he like waxes poetic about the French flag and gets very angry at Data when or Data says it's like the they would talk about the Ferengi. Data's like it is, resembles the American red, white, and blue. And Picard goes, or the more
mad, yeah.
He goes, the more properly the way the French call it, more properly is the however the French say, they say like blue, white, and red or something is the order for their colors. And so it's this
Picard.
He gets this very upset thing, and when he basically asks for information and then snaps at Data for no reason. All right, so let's see. Den of Geek said they like the central idea, typical poor quality of early episodes of the series. Multiple plot details were not addressed, such as the origin of the alien entity and the reason for the Edo's fear of it. Just, I guess, I just figure they're a god and they're scared of
right,
everything.
Like Data says, any advanced society would seem like a god to them.
Yeah, exactly. And
they're all rubes.
Jammer's
is what he said.
These idiots. And Jammer's review said that the episode features yet another Trek cliche of the infinitely superior life form, which is the god.
Again, yeah, they make them constantly, and they never follow up with them except Q. But yep. Aside from that, none of the infinite beings they've encountered they ever follow up with.
No, which is fine. Q's at least interesting. Cool.
Yeah,
cool. So that's Justice, the eighth episode of season one. So thank you very much, Mr. Modi, for watching this with us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you
for having me.
Yeah, it was fun. We'll have to do it again. It's good to get a little feedback on these things.
And absolutely, it was fun.
So I will put a link to Modi's YouTube channel in this little thumbnail or the actual video for it. You can click there to see what he does. He's got a Minecraft series going that I quite enjoy. Nice production value there.
And thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure. And next time we'll... What the hell is the next episode? Let me look at this Wikipedia. Oh, it's gone. Well, anyway, I'll be back.
Next episode is the battle with the Ferengi.
Oh, excellent. The Ferengi are back. How exciting.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Yeah, but we'll definitely do this again in the future, and thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you want to put a little like or whatever, watch it, leave a comment, something. It makes me happy day to day. And otherwise, I will see you guys next time with the next podcast. Thank you for listening, and see you later.
Bye.